Okay, tonight's shir is Le'iloi Nishmas, my grandfather, whose yard site was yesterday, and Malki's grandfather, whose yard site is tomorrow. They made it really easy for me, the two of them. So the learning should be Le'iloi Nishmasam. All right, so I know we've asked this question before, no doubt, because I know that we've done chaburas on this, and there's not that much more to talk about in Parshas Bahar, but what is the purpose of Shemitah? That's our big question tonight. There's a lot of different possibilities, which we could spend time on, but I want to share with you an idea by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, which I think is an excellent way to understand Shemitah. But I will say, and I think we might have done this in the past, and I really, like, if I did roll call earlier in the week, it would be, like, much easier. I'd be like, all right, maybe it was, like, a long time ago, whatever. But Rabbi Alex Israel actually looks and says, like, there's three times that it talks about Shemitah in the Torah, and he has a very similar idea where he, like, looks at each set of psukim, and he says, this set of psukim is referring to this, and this is, and he creates his own, like, his own construct that way. So we're going to do something a little bit different, but Rabbi Sacks does have three different components to Shemitah, and he kind of stuffs it all into our parsha. So the Torah tells us, that's a very packed pasuk. Right, the land will give its fruit, and you'll eat and be full, and you'll be comfortable in the land. Probably comfortable is the wrong word, more like secure. Okay, so that's the first pasuk. So Rashi points out, v'natna ha'aretz pirya v'yishavtem levetach aleha, right? Rashi is saying that, like, there's a lot of stuff going on here. What's it trying to say? Shelo tidagu mishnat batzoret. You don't have to be worried about the possibility of starvation, which, like, isn't that, like, the biggest concern you have during Shemitah is, like, wait a second, how are we going to do this? There's no planting going on. So how do we make that happen? I don't know. Meaning, like, I don't think that we think too much about it because we don't live in an agricultural society. So because we don't live in an agricultural society, like, as long as Stop and Shop shelves are full or whatever, you're getting your food, like, you're good. Although, I think that even though Shemitah is next year, I do believe that we had moments like that last year, right? Like, I remember when we were, like, I went into one store to get water, figuring, like, that wasn't a big deal, and the shelves are completely bare, except for one company. One company had, like, 300 water bottles on the shelf. It was like nobody touched them. And I remember thinking to myself, I was like, their marketing people have to figure this one out. It's like, because that's really bad. It's like it's picked clean and they're all there. But, right, so I guess to some extent, like, maybe we got that a little bit. But, like, it's whatever, you know. Okay, like, pasta was there. You know, like, certain staples were in shortage. Although I found it also amazing with pasta. The only ones at the time that you couldn't get, there was, like, right away. First, like, you didn't touch China, and then Italy had that, right? Italy was also pretty bad at the same time. All the pasta that said made in Italy, like, it wasn't moving. But everything else, I couldn't find anything. Right? So, like, that's, we do know a little bit what that's like, but, like, we can't fully appreciate that. And yet the Torah is saying to us, don't worry about it. Meaning that's the promise inherent in this pasuk. V'chaltem lasova. So why does that have to say that?
So what's bothering Rashi that he has to say that? That you shouldn't worry.
I assume that he's going on v'shavtem lebetach aleha. Right, meaning, like, what would be, you have the land, you're going to be full, what would be your concern? Like, what's the need to tell us v'shavtem lebetach?
What kind of, you said secure, what do you mean secure? Physical security, what, from enemies?
Food insecurity.
Right, so you would think, meaning usually when we talk about, like, betach, like, it's like safety and security, like, there is, but there's no.
It also means faithful. You don't have to.
Oh, I hear. Okay, so if you do that, then Rashi, faithfully would be. You're not worried about a famine.
Maybe that's where he's going.
I could be. My guess is that that's he, right. He's trying to figure out what right security. Normally, when we use the word betach, we think about like yes, of course. So yeah, but I guess that's where Rashi is coming from. That you would be concerned not about an external enemy, but like the fact that there won't be any food. That would be my guess. V'achaltem l'sova. So what's Rashi bothered there? So if it not aretz pirya, v'achaltem l'sova. Well, why do you need to tell us that? Like, if there is enough food, then you're presumably, right? You go to a shmorg, and there's, unless you get there at the very last minute, right?
Maybe not presumably. Maybe fine. You're not in danger of a famine, but, you know, you've got to ration things. And there's things like, no, it's going to be more than that. It'll be comfortably, it'll be sober.
Okay, so Rashi actually, I think along those lines, says, Af betocha me'ayim tebo bracha, that even inside your stomach, you'll be full. Meaning, like, you could eat a lot and not be satisfied and not be full, or you can just, like, eat a little bit and sometimes, like...
So is this a miraculous fullness, like a mun type of, no matter what you eat, you're satisfied?
So I don't think it has to be that way. Meaning, like, we've all had these moments where, like, I don't know, today for lunch, all I had was a yogurt, and it was totally good, right? Which explains why when I came home, like, two bowls of mac and cheese and, like, three mini cheese Danish and a banana, and I was still, like, starving.
You weren't. It was like a Chinese food bit.
Right.
It's like a state of mind thing. If you're more vulnerable, actually, there are different ways in mind. Would you be more satisfied when you eat, whether or not you're doing the same?
I think the same way that Henry will tell you that it's always a sacrifice, right? And he'll never live that down. I think... But I think that's like true. I think also like everything is miraculous, right? But what does that really mean? Like, meaning, is it like taking a pill that all of a sudden like fills you up and that's like, you know, or whatever, or like God, like miraculously you take a bite of an apple and you're like, oh, I'm so full. I think that what God is saying here is that there are times where you eat like a small amount, but somehow you find yourself legitimately not Chinese food, but legitimately full. And then you have some times where like you can keep eating and eating and eating and eating, and you just don't find like fulfillment. Is that a miracle? I mean, I think everything on some level is a miracle. But I think the promise here is that somehow you'll need less and you'll still be okay.
I'll make sure that you're good. You'll have less than you would normally physically, but I'll make sure you're good.
No, because I don't think we're like talking about going from like 2,000 calories to 500 calories or like, you know, concentrate.
2,000 to 1,700, I mean, you want to get some amount less and you'll still feel like it was full. That's.
But why does that, why does that?
I don't actually have a problem with that.
Oh, because I don't think that's like,
Maybe he's saying it a different way. Maybe he's saying you'll still have your 2,000 calories. You won't have to have less. I'm going to provide you with the 2,000 calories, even though you don't have a harvest.
That's good too.
I don't think that's what Rashi's saying. I think Rashi's saying that you can go from 2,000 calories to 1,700 calories, and you'll be full
for a year.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, but you can do that. Meaning, like we eat in excess, most of us, right? Like that's. I think like I can only imagine. Can you imagine someone from a third world country coming to a wedding? And like trying to wrap their head around the fact that there's a smorgasbord. And wait, I was at a school dinner once, and I was like, it was not the Hank dinner, of course. I did not want to be at this dinner, but I was forced to because whatever, family member was honored. So like, whatever. But I somehow was told that there was just a smorg. So I come to the smorg, and I was like, I got to eat, like, because this is it. It's the whole meal. And I'm like eating and I'm eating and I'm eating. And then like someone gets on the loudspeaker and goes, everybody please finish up. We're going to move into the main ballroom for dinner and speeches. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I was like, I just signed up for speeches, not dinner. They put out like another dinner. Like, I don't think people would, like, pass the, like, why do you need all that? So I think that, like, yeah, we recommend a certain number of calories because, like, we've got it out there. We don't need that.
You know, it's going to burn less calories because you don't have to farm your fields.
That's an interesting way of looking at it, right? Like, I guess if you're sitting, like, if you're sitting in the base medrash and you're just learning, although I think I ate much more when I was in the base medrash. It's like at your seat. You're like, I scoop of peanut butter and, like, cookies all day.
What's our understanding of the first 3 words of this
pasuk? The land will give its fruit and you'll eat to fulfill.
It'll give its fruit the regular amount, a higher amount, a less amount.
So I think that's a really good question. And I don't think that's clear. Meaning the field has to sustain you for 2 years. So if it has to sustain you for 2 years, even if the output is, I don't know, 1.5 times the typical year, it still won't be enough to, like, make it on a whatever. So one possibility is that God will double the produce. And in a Yovel year, God will triple the produce. Which, then, what's really the challenge? Right? Meaning, like,
well, if... Same as Bond on Friday afternoons. What were they worried about? Some of them didn't believe it.
No, but, yeah. Right. But if I told you, you're not going to work for a year. But the year before that, I want to let you know, I'm going to double your salary. Right? And then, you still have your job in a year from now, right? But I'm giving you a sabbatical. Like, where's the challenge there?
But there's a difference between the doubling.
Right, so that's one possibility, right? That's one possible way of looking at it.
Right, in your example, you're going in, you know, you've got the money, so you're good to go. There, you're going in blind, you're going on faith. Even if you, yes, Hashem is telling you, there will be enough, but you don't.
Right, so I guess one way of looking at it is even if God goes to 200%, so you're good, you still have the fear, like, but the field has stopped. What's going to happen in the next year? Will it grow back? I don't know. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that the miracle is that you're not getting 200% and that you're getting 150%, but it'll be fine because the achal tamasova. It'll be fine. You'll be full. So if you have 75% of the food, your stomach will be good.
Well, you still have some food growing, and you are allowed to pick it for yourself.
Right.
So even if it's 150%, you're still supplementing it with things that are growing in your fields.
But I'm sharing it. I'm sharing it with everyone.
Well, that's fine. You're making a profit off of it, but you're going to have food for yourself.
You hope, but if my field, I mean, I guess I can go to anybody's field, but if everybody, like right now, the field belongs to me. So what the percentages are, like, you get to keep about 78% and 22%, which is, like, I guess, it's like taxes, same concept, right? Except that the taxes are allocated not to the government, but to the poor. You probably feel better that way than when it goes to the government. But okay, fine, whatever it is. But this of the 78%, if I have a really big field and I have a lot of stuff, and I it's way more than I need, well, I'm selling it to everybody. In this year, where everybody has, like, full access to it. So I don't know. There might not be enough food to go around. Like, that could be a panicky feeling. But you still hopefully have stuff in your silos, right? Like, the grain lasts a while. But I think it's still scary. Steve, you're about to say something.
Well, that's very similar to what you've been saying. But even though certain things can last, other things won't. You know, without, even with our modern-day refrigeration, your apple is not going to last. You pick it today, it's not going to last 6 months.
Other than the food distribution apples, I'm telling you, they last forever, forever. And then when you, and then they come back with another bag. Yeah. For those of you that don't get the food distribution, it's quite a party each week. I hear you. Right, like there is a certain limit. But I think also, like, and this is like a phenomenon even nowadays, like that's unique. Like you can get any fruit you want in New York all the time, right? Like even stuff that's out of season. There are many countries, which I'm told in Israel by and large is the case also, Like, if it's not in season and it's not growing in the trees, you're not eating it. So, like, whereas, yes, the cost of certain fruits go up during off season and go down during, you know, peak season, but, like, you can get it. So, yeah, that's true. But wheat lasts a really, really long time. So you'll always have those staples. I don't know. I guess the question really is, like, I certainly didn't think we'd spend this much time on Pasuk Yotet. In fact, it's funny because I was like, I don't even think this is going to last a half hour. But all right. That's the beauty of the Chabura. If I were to just record this on my own, it's like, you know, it's a nice Dvar Torah. But yeah, all this is goes to the heart of the question. What's the purpose of Shemitah? So is Shemitah a test for us to, like, show that we believe in God? Could be. Let's see what else. Okay, so Pazachav. V'chi tomru ma'no chal bashana hat-shvi'it. What happens when you say to yourself, V'chi tomru, right? And when you will say, what will I eat? Or what will we eat in the seventh year? Hein lo nizrav lo nasav tuatinu. We didn't plant, and we can't gather our stuff. So I will give my blessing on the sixth year, and it will make enough to last for 3 years. Because it's going to give you, the sixth year will be enough produce to get through the sixth year, the seventh year, and you need to get through part of the eighth year until you have the new crops from year one of the next cycle. So the Or HaChaim has a great comment on this. It's a much longer comment. I only took the part that I wanted to share. Elo kiben shomer lifnei aviv. He says, what does that mean, the chitomru? The chitomru. Pesach is not that long ago, right? But like the psukim by the Arba Banim, right, that they darshan from, the chitomar, right, when your son will say. So the Or HaChaim says, elo kiben shomer lifnei aviv manochal. He says, Abba, what are we going to eat? V'az v'tziviti. Avom t'yekam natam b'mamar manu uchal ederach harishon az lo yitzaveh Hashem itam et habracha. It sounds like the bracha, what you're saying to him is we're giving him, your kid asks the question, how are we going to make it? It's a theological, like, answer. You say to the kid, you know how you're going to make it? We're going to make it because God will take care of us. I think that that's, like, a good answer to what the purpose of Shemitah is. So is that it? Is Shemitah all about, like, just the faith piece? So I don't know. It's got to be more to it. So I love this Vart. And it's probably one of, like, the Divrei Torah I've shared the most. Actually, when your grandfather and your grandfather-in-law died 2 days apart, Levaya unveiling, 3 years in a row, I said the same Dvar Torah, twice graveside, once not. But it's such an amazing idea that Rabbi Tzion Fira shares. It was actually the first Dvar Torah I ever heard from Rabbi Penner. So he asks also, what's the purpose of Shemitah? And he, like, completely avoids the whole idea of, like, the belief in God piece. And he says it's simply that the poor person could hold his head up high, walk into the field, and go, you know, feel like he's going toe-to-toe with the rich man.
Once every 7 years.
So also, I mean, it happens to be, it's a really nice idea. Rabbi Penner, the reason why I heard this Dvar Torah was, and if I shared this before, I apologize. The reason I heard this Dvar Torah was that it was my, I don't want to say it's my prabha because I was already given the job, but it was my prabha to be the youth director. So I came to, like, check out the shul, and it was like a horribly rainy morning. I walked a mile from Jamaica States to Holliswood. And do you know how many kids came to groups that Shabbos? It must be like a record. Zero. It's like nobody there. And I was like, they're going to come, right? And they're like, no. I was like, all right, this could be a really fun job next year. So I was like getting ready to leave. And an old family friend of my parents walked over and goes, you already walked in the pouring rain anyway. You should come and hear Rabbi Penner speak. And I was like, never heard him before. I don't even think I know who he is, really. And I was like, you know, I don't know. I drank the Kool-Aid that Shabbos. He was like so amazing. But it was May time, and he was talking about how, like, you know, we have to be so sensitive and tuition assistance, and how sometimes, like, it doesn't give the person who's struggling that sense that he has the ability or she has the ability to treat their family to what nowadays are more like necessities than luxuries. It was beautifully done, but then, like, you kind of walk away and say, like, but there's a problem with that, like, what about the other 6 years? So the answer is that at least once, let that family feel a sense of normalcy or equality once every 7 years. So that's another possibility. But maybe there is another answer to what the message of Shemitah is, or what the purpose of Shemitah is. Okay, so Uzartem et Hashana Hashminit, you're going to plant in the 8th year, which is year 1. V'achaltem in atua yashan ad Hashana Tshi'it, ad bo tvotach tochlu yashan. You'll eat the old stuff until the 9th year, when you finally get new stuff. It's a lot of stuff that you're relying on, all from year 6. Now, this has nothing to do with anything, right? The land can't be sold for eternity because the land belongs to me. Because you're gerim and toshavim from my perspective. Meaning, that's the justification, is that I can demand Shemitah because the land isn't yours. But
another way around, say it's like you have to listen to me about this because I control how it works.
Right, but don't you think we can get away without the words "Va'aretz lo timacher litzmitu"? Just kili haaretz. You want to know why we have shmita? Kili haaretz, because the land is mine. And why? And
why do we need a reason at all? What if this puzzle didn't exist?
Then we would sit here and ask the question. Well, we'd ask the question no matter what. What's the purpose of Shemitah? So you want to tell me that maybe the answer is that Shemitah is really a chok?
Okay.
All right, maybe. It's not a hard chok, meaning I could give you...
Agricultural reasons.
Right, it's good for land. I actually... I had like this thought earlier in the week that maybe... The purpose of, and I think we could really appreciate this more now than like they could 2,000 years ago, is that the purpose of Shemitah really is, it just gives us a chance to catch our breath and stop. Like, I don't know. Anybody that, if you worked from home over the last year, at least what, I mean, I always wanted to work from home. I was like, I dreamt that like you could be like a school administrator and work from home until I did it. And I was like, oh my God, this is like not normal. But one of the things that a lot of people complained about was if you were working from home, the homework divide disappeared and you basically, you were always working, right? So if there was ever a year where we could like be, oh my God, like what is the purpose of Shemitah? I think that's a really big part of Shemitah. Yeah, right. Shabbos does it for the week and Shemitah does it for 7 years.
Said before about, well, I shouldn't say it. So in year 6, I'll make sure that it covers year 6, year 7, and the part of year 8 that you don't have.
Right, and then and you
that
just.
It sounds like the stories you used to hear about, like Jews in the Lower East Side in the 1900s, when the people who were Shomer Shabbos, they can only work Sunday to Friday because then they get fired for not going on Shabbos. They have to get a new job on Sunday. So they believe that their pay for the week within 5 days, so 6 days, would last them through the 7th day and the 8th day because I don't have a new job. It's just. Magnified or minimized.
I think that's true. And just because it's the art site here for my grandfather. My grandfather worked 45 jobs in 1947. No, so I was the right. My father, who's an accountant, wishes that he had like his tax, you know, his tax thing from like 1947. No, the reason why he only worked 47 jobs, there are 5 weeks it wasn't worth getting a job. I mean, like the weeks of like of Rosh Hashanah, the week of Pesach. What was the point? It was a 2-day work week. It wasn't worth trying. But yeah, like it's a crazy concept. But again, I think we have to figure out like Va'aretz lo timacher litzmitut. That part seems in excess. David says, I don't even, the whole pasuk isn't necessary. Like,
what's that word supposed to mean?
What? What's that word supposed to mean? I believe, I mean, somebody could like check it in the, I have no idea what the shorish is. I mean, there might be a Rashi that gives us the shorish on it. I think it's for posterity. Eternity, right? Perpetuity. Sorry. Yeah. You can't sell it. It's not sold forever. Meaning, like, if I sell my land, if I sell my ancestral land in Israel, after it comes back.
That's yoga, actually.
Right. So why? Yeah. It doesn't. The whole thing. Fine. And in the entire land, right? Like, there's redemption is there for the land. And then I only put the next pasuk in because I wasn't sure what else I was going to take. What happens if a person is poor and they have to sell their land? The family member who's closest has to redeem it. Well, where do we know that story coming up really soon? Right, that's the Megillah. Right, Boaz does that. And Ploni Almoni was ready to do because he said, like, wait a second. This is, like, totally normal. Of course I'm going to buy the field. The only thing that holds Ploni Almoni back is he's like, wait a second. It's a package deal? I'm not taking her. I just want the field. Otherwise, he would have, like, totally taken the field. So that is, why did I include that pasuk? So first of all, what is like the smichas parshio? So we go from shmita to this. But notice in that pasuk, what do you have twice? You have the word ach. Now in our parsha, we have the word ach 10 times. So also, if you're looking for the chumash stuff, I think they hide it in the front. Why do we have the word ach 10 times in our parsha? So we have two questions so far. Purpose of Shemitah, and why the emphasis on the word ach in our parsha. So let's jump down to Amos. So I've really never learned Amos. And I hope one day maybe to get to Treyasar. But I will say this. I had a really big box of Svarim. They were doubles, triples, things that like I knew I was not going to like be able to like I wasn't gonna use it. So we posted and tried to get rid of it. After getting rid of like half of it, like this was what was left. So there's a store in the five towns, Svarim Forwarders. It's a fun store to go into, even if you're not like interested in shopping there. And sometimes it's complicated to shop there because the store owner leaves the door open when he leaves for long times. This is what the customers told me. And people just come in and hang out, wait till he gets there. So like I waited for 45 minutes, like till he came in with this big box of Svarim that I thought he was gonna buy for me. And I showed it to him and he goes, leave it over there. And I was like, and he's like, and put it on the floor in the box. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, you know what? While I was waiting 45 minutes for you, I saw one book that I really wanted. I left it on the counter for you. I was like, I'll give you all these books for free. I want that book in exchange. He looks at me and goes, I have to see what book it is. So he sees what book it is. He goes, you can have it. It's totally fine. So,
cannot be sold beyond reclaim.
Okay, that sounds like forever.
Yeah, pretty much.
So anyway, what was this book? This book was in their Tanakh section. It was called Who Knows 12, which like sounds like it's going to be Pesach related, but it's actually Rabbi Wein wrote a book on the Treyasar. This was going somewhere connected to what we were learning. So anyway, he wrote like a book that I thought it's by Magid Books, so I figured like it's totally going to be like one of these like all the other stuff I've been reading on Tanakh for the last like lot of years. It's not. It's like it's beautiful drashos, but he actually weaves all the Treyasar together. I started over Pesach, probably won't finish it until Sukkot, but it's like excellent. And like you're introduced into the world of the Treyasar, and I'm so jealous because he said that's what he learned, like his Rebbeim, Like, they had a few minutes. Like, they would talk everything from Trey Asar. And I was like, I don't know. I think Mati and I had the same Rebbe for Trey Asar back in high school. Nicest guy, but I didn't feel like I learned the world view from Trey. I learned nice things because he was a tzaddik, but I don't think I necessarily learned, like, a world view. But, yeah, he says, I almost dealt with a world where there was, like, such wealth. And so you had these people that were doing so incredibly well. And of course, in every society like that, you also have extreme poverty. And so the economic balance was so skewed that he says the following. This is in his perek where he does, Komar Hashem al shlosha pishe, on three sins of such and such a country, Balarba lo ashivenu. You did three things wrong. I gave you a pass, but on the fourth one, I couldn't forgive you. So this is the one about the Jews. Amos says, Ko amar Hashem al shlosha pishe Yisrael valarba lo shivenu. Three sins you had, the fourth one, I can't turn back. Al michram b'kesef tzadik ve'vyom bavur na'alayim. Is that you, that the tzadik was forced to sell everything he had, the evyon, and the poor person, bavur na'alayim. The poor person had to give everything up for a pair of shoes. He says, could you imagine? I think this is Rabbi Wein. He says, could you imagine? You have this woman who's walking in this most unbelievably expensive piece of jewelry. And she walks down the street. There's someone who's literally starving to death. And she's able to look away and not take care of that person. That's al arba lo ashivenu. Meaning, Amos is saying, God is willing to look the other way from idolatry. God is willing to look away from so many of the sins that you're doing. But God looks at you and says, like, how could you not take care of the poor? Rabbi Sacks says economic inequality leads to an inequality of power where the poor feel so powerless and the rich feel so powerful. How do we address this? So Rabbi Sacks says there's not one answer to address the problems of inequality, the economic inequality in society. It's not a simple answer. The Torah doesn't believe in socialism. It doesn't believe in communism. And it doesn't believe in capitalism. Because each of those by themselves, it just doesn't work. So what is the Torah's answer? The Torah's answer is Shemitah. Shemitah will help create a sense of equality. So he says, how does that work? He says it works in three different ways. The first way is on like more of a political level, is that the Torah does believe in redistribution of wealth. It's not really a very popular concept in many circles in our country, but the Torah believes in that. How does the Torah believe in that? The Torah believes that Shemitah could do that. See, if the poor person never gets a reset, then he's going to fall into such a hole, it'll be impossible for the person to ever climb out of it. So what the Torah suggests is, once every 7 years, we redistribute wealth. Meaning instead of the produce being divided where a very small percentage of the people get most of it, it's going to be divided really per mouth. You can't take more than you could eat. You can't take more than your family could eat. So if there are 1 million people in the land, then the food should be distributed about 1 million ways, as opposed to a typical year where it's not that way. But that's not enough. What else does Shemitah do? Shemitah cancels debt. It means that if the poor person is riding crazy amounts of debt going into Shemitah, the Torah says, I'm going to give you a chance to start over again. And even once every 50 years, the Torah goes one step further and says, Va'aretz lo timacher litzmitut. If you lost your ancestral land, 48 years ago, all of a sudden it comes back to you. All those things don't guarantee a poor person that they'll become wealthy, but they guarantee that the poor person has a chance to make it. That's impossible without Shemitah. Unless you go to a completely socialist society, which the Torah doesn't say it endorses, but it endorses a society that once every 7 years does something to level the playing field. So that's one. The next part that the Torah addresses is something on a psychological level. But not like Rabbi Fuhrer said, that we want them to be able to walk, you know, toe-to-toe into the field with each other. But the Torah offers a very different idea. And this is where the Torah says, what's the word that guides us through this entire parsha? An ach. See, if you take a look at the middle, Vayikra Chaf Hei, it is an interesting thing. Because what does it say? V'chiyamuch achicha imach. Your brother becomes poor. V'nimkar lach. And he's sold as a slave. It happens. Meaning he's that destitute that he can't make it on his own. Lo tavod vo avodat aved. You can't make him work like a slave. Now, he is a slave. But what it means is, like, there are certain things that are so demeaning that you can't ask him to do. Whether it's pointless and that embarrasses him, or just to say, like, hey, you're my slave. I want you to carry my towel to the bathhouse for me. We can't do that. Kisachir ketoshav yaimach ad shnat yovel yavod imach. He works with you until yovel. V'yetzam imach hu vanav imo v'shavol mishvach tov v'achuzat avotav yashuv. He goes back. He comes back out with his family and goes back to his family. So Rashi asks, what do you mean? Where did his family come from? So the command that's given to the boss is if you're the master, you don't only have to take care of the guy, you have to take care of his whole family. You cannot be sold as a slave forever. You can't make him work pointlessly, but you're yaritam elokecha. God says, you should be afraid, right? You have to fear God. Why? Because you might say, well, I wasn't making him work pointless. You don't know what was in my head. God says, I do. And then it says, but the nations that live around you, this does not sound very PC, right? The nations that live around you, they're the ones you could buy as slaves. Those that live in your country, the locals, who have decided to keep, the laws, right? They can be your slaves. And they're achuza. They're your property. They are, if there is anything that is the exact opposite of Lo timacher litzmitut. These are litzmitut forever, right? 10 generations from now, my great 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 whatever grandchildren will be the master over their family. But to the Jewish people, you don't do that.
Sounds nice, but they really want, they want, I guess, to be so they can pay off their debts, whatever their issues are, but it's not worth hassles, is it?
Yeah, it's much harder. I mean, the Gemara says, like, if you have one pillow, the slave gets it. Like, I don't know, it's not worth it. Because the other picture of the other slave, he ain't getting the pillow. And even though we're it's a more ethical slavery, like the whole, like, you know, southern plantation owner, like, in a fit of rage, beating the slave mercilessly. Like, the Torah says, like, if that happens, he goes free, and if you kill him, you lose your life. So, like, it doesn't make any sense. But, yeah, but why is this here? So this is Rabbi Sacks says something so beautiful. He says that the reason why do I have to take care of the Jewish slave so well? Because he's what? He's my brother. And v'chiyamuch achicha, when my brother, when my family member is struggling, when my family member is in a bad place, what do I do for them? I take care of them. right? That's what we do for our family. We sacrifice for our family. And so the message of Shemitah is, first, politically we redistribute the wealth. Secondly, psychologically, we are forced to view the entire Jewish people as what? Our extended family. And if we view them as our extended family, then we have to take care of them. And that will create a sense that throughout all 7 years, we need to take care of them. Rabbi Sachs points out that Bereishis started not with a nation. It starts with a single Jewish family, Avraham. And even by the time we get to Yaakov, it's still one family unit. If the foundation of the Jewish people are a family like that, it kind of forces our mindset to be familial. And that's why it's to this day, you know, unfortunately, more often we only feel this way when there's like, you know, tragedy. But there's a certain bond that bonds Jewish people together that doesn't necessarily exist in many other nations. That's the second part of it. And then there's the third part of it. The third part of it is theological. And that is where God says, Ki avadai heim asher hotzeiti otam me'aretz Mitzrayim. The reason why you can't own the Jewish people as slaves is Ki avadai heim. They belong to me. And this is where Rabbi Sachs says the title of his article is We Are What We Do Not Own. Right? That's the greatness of the Jewish people becomes when we recognize we don't own any of it. None of it is ours, including ourselves. But we're not the land doesn't belong to us, the people don't belong to us, but we all belong to God. And he says that changes everything. And while I don't want to, it's a little bit late, so I'm not going to go into this Rashi, but we all know this famous Rashi on the first pasuk in the Torah. Right? Rashi asks, like, why do we start from here? Can't we start from, right? Let's start from HaChodesh HaZalachem. That's like, it teaches us meat. Right, start with the mitzvot. So why do we start from here? So he answers that Rabbi Sachs says the Torah does not answer the question that the Torah is answering in Bereishit bara Elokim et haShamayim et haAretz is not how did the world come into existence, which hopefully next year I've got like some good stuff for. But that's not the question that the Torah is addressing. The Torah is not saying it's not a scientific question. It's asking a simple question: how does Hashem control everything? Because Bereishit bara Elokim et haShamayim et haAretz, God created the world from the beginning. If we understand it that way, that everything came from God, then yeah, we're not in a position to what? To hold the land back. Of course we're going to give it to everyone. We're going to share. It changes our entire worldview. I'll end with a beautiful idea, and that is that the words tzedek and tzedakah are very much related in Hebrew, right? But in English, what's tzedek? Justice. And what's tzedakah? Which they're like complete opposites, right? Like, I owe $1,000 to someone, I pay them back. Why do I do that? Because it's justice. I owe you money, I have to pay it back, right? I give you $1,000 because you need it, but I don't owe it to you. That's called what? It's called tzedakah. They're not related in like the English way. But tzedek and tzedakah, Rabbi Sachs, they are actually very much in Hebrew related. See, because if I view it that everything belongs to Hashem, then everything I'm doing, if it's paying the money back, it's a certain sense of tzedek, it's justice, but I'm also God's tool or God's vehicle to take care of this person. And if I give tzedakah to someone, but the money doesn't really belong to me, then what am I doing? It's also justice. I'm returning what God wants to this person. That's the idea behind Shemitah. I'll end with a quick story. So there is Maurice and Vivian Wohl. I don't know. They're very, very big Balei Tzedakah. The name Wohl is a lot in the Old City. Maybe it's the same family. I don't know. They donated the 19-acre Rose Garden next to the Knesset. And some other really nice thing at Bar Ilan University, amongst other things. So Rabbi Sachs says he got to know them well, and he said, like, the thing that was a little bit weird about them as a couple was that there's like 30-some-odd years between them. So he said, like, how did they meet? So he said that when Vivian was young, Maurice was old, and he assumed that he was never going to get married, and that was what it was, and Vivian was working for him. And one day, like, Maurice said, let me take you out to lunch. You know, it was the middle of the workday, let's grab some lunch. And on their way to the restaurant, they passed like a poor guy in the street. So Maurice, thinking he was generous, took like, you know, a dollar out of his pocket, gave it to the guy. And Vivian turned to him and said, I'm sorry, can I ask you a really big favor? Can I get an advance on my entire salary for the week right now? He said, fine. No problem. He pulled out her entire salary for the week and gave it to her. And then she gave it to the guy. So he was like blown away. So at the end of the week, he said, like, you know, I've got to, like, I want to pay you something. So he said to her, I want to give you, like, something because I want, like, a little piece of your mitzvah. And he was, like, taken by her and whatever. They got married in the end of the story. But Rabbi Sacks says that, like, the wolves, like, that story captures, like, I forgot one piece. So he turned to her and said to her, I don't understand, like, why? He didn't need, like, why did you need to give her that, him, you know, that, the poor person that much? So she said, what you gave helped him, but it wasn't going to change his life. What I gave is going to change his life. And I think that that's really what Shemitah is supposed to be. Shemitah is supposed to be on so many levels a way of creating a vehicle to help the poor person really change his lot in life, but also creating like a culture that allows people to change and be successful. That, Rabbi Sacks says, is what Shemitah is all about.